The Book Nook on WYSO is presented by the Greene County Public Library, with additional support from Wright Memorial Public Library, Clark County Public Library, Tipp City Public Library, Dayton Metro Library, and Washington Centerville Public Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I'd like to welcome back to the program Eric Rickstad. He joins us on the phone in Vermont. He's got a new novel out. It's called Lilith. Welcome back, Eric.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Vic. I appreciate it.
Eric, I get the sense that this is something, this story has been gestating inside you for a while. Tell us about that.
Yes, it has. It was a book novel that's 10 years in the making. During that time, there were many times where I wondered if I could write it, if I should write it, concerning the material, the subject matter of school gun violence, school shootings. But, you know, it sort of started with me dropping off my daughter, who's now 13, to pre-K 9 or 10 years ago in a small Vermont town where we all know each other, maybe 1,800 of us. We encounter each other throughout each day, and I dropped her off on what should be fun, if not joyous, but a little bit anxiety-ridden day of dropping off your kid for the first time to pre-K. And there was a sign that said, you know, blue lights are flashing, do not enter school. And I thought, okay, well, I didn't expect that in our small town. I'm not naive, but here we go. And then the door was locked, and the woman I know that's inside, you know, has to buzz all of her parents and kids in. And then subsequently I learned that, you know, our daughter is, you know, practicing lockdowns for basically preparing to be slaughtered. I'm aware of all these things, but it really hit home to have to sort of live it and experience it for the first time, especially in a small town where the assumption is, I guess, that we expect someone in town to do this, to walk in one day with a gun because they're upset and kill our kids because, you know, someone in Boston isn't throwing a dart at a map saying, I think I'll go to this town in Vermont to kill kids today. And it bothered me for a long time. I started writing it and working on it and putting it down and working on it. I wrote three novels during the time that I wrote this one particular novel and tried to find a way to crack the code, as I like to say, and find my way into it and find the right voice and the right character and the right narrative structure. And the more I wrote it, the more outraged and helpless I felt at times, especially while writing it. I don't know how many school shootings there have been over the last decade, but way, way too many, and one's too many. So there were times where I had to be prodded by my wife, keep writing it. You'll find it. So it's a personal novel in a lot of ways, but I'm finding as I go out on tour and speak to superintendents and teachers and book readers of all sorts that it struck a nerve, and it's getting very positive reception for the serious nature of its content.
Well, Eric, you're in our thoughts and prayers.
Exactly right.
It's not funny. It's not very funny, is it?
No, it's not.
No.
It's not.
No.
This is a woman, you know, it's a mother in the story. She drives the story who has a young son. She's a school teacher, and they suffer a traumatic shooting at their school. And on top of that, while her son's in ICU, she has to suffer the indignity of the absurdity of a person like an Alex Jones. I'll say his name right out. These people, I believe, are just terrible human beings, spinning these narratives and these false narratives. And I conflated that type of character with a extremist Second Amendment gun fetishist who's on certain networks after school shootings who are saying, you know, these school shootings are being leveraged to victimize our Second Amendment rights. And this woman has to sort of be subjected to this ongoing onslaught of lies and propaganda and fear by certain men, while the men in D.C. do nothing to help our nation. And she decides she's going to strike out against this man in a very public way and use basically gun violence to demonstrate the absurdity of all these narratives that basically are, you know, their only answers, thoughts and prayers. And she decides she's going to kill this man.
His name is Akers.
Yes.
And as we're reading this, we're, of course, asking ourselves, do two wrongs make a right?
Right. Well, one wrong doesn't make a right. I know that. So, you know, it's she's tired of this narrative that we've all seen. Well, the school shooting just happened, so now's not the time. Now's not the time to discuss practical, reasonable, measured adult, you know, responses and gun legislation. Nothing gets done. And she decides for this man, this Max Akers, who's the most infamous gun dealer in the country, has the most famous or infamous gun shop in a little town. He's always the one speaking out on cable news after a shooting, you know, trying to spin it that somehow our Second Amendment rights are under attack instead of our kids being slaughtered. And he's the first to offer those condolences and thoughts and prayers. And she wonders, you know, how will his ilk react if he's the one victimized? Hmm. She goes into this shop and he has four other cronies, and she uses a very particular illegal weapon to get into his shop as a Trojan horse that she knows they'll be interested in. How will the world react when these good guys with guns who are fully armed, if she gets away with it, are murdered and she films it and puts it out to the world? Here are these men, these brave men with their guns, killed by a woman. How will the world respond? She's trying to rewrite her own myth, and rewrite a myth since there's a lot of mythology involved in the United States about guns and men and violence and being tough. And I don't know if two wrongs make a right, but one wrong doesn't make a right either. So that's her point of view. And she's tired of being subjected and victimized over and over again in a real way.
Eric, thank you for dancing back from the edge of the spoiler abyss there. I was not going to give away any of that stuff that you just revealed, but you're the author and you're entitled to say what you want. Yeah. I read the book and totally got where you were coming from, but a lot of people are not going to agree with you. A lot of people, are you concerned that there's some people out there that are going to go, this guy, we need to shut him up?
No, I'm not concerned about it at all. In fact, you know, I just finished up doing readings in New York and New York City and Boston and all over Vermont and parts of upstate New York, and we'll continue to do them. And everything I've seen for reviews and, you know, Goodreads and reviews and media and print media and everywhere is that the response keeps being, you know, this is a necessary book. This book was needed. I've talked with superintendents and teachers at these book events. People are on it every day and there every day. And the overwhelming response has been, I'm glad this book is out there so we can discuss this, you know, school shootings and the gun violence where nothing is done. No one's going to condone necessarily what she does in the book. It's a novel. Mm. So it extrapolates out into a place that we've never gone before. But part of the reason I wrote this book was because I can't believe we are where we are as it is, and neither can this character. How is it we're at the spot where, you know, teachers and principals and students have to practice being murdered in a place that should be sacred for learning and community and learning how to be a young person. So I'm not worried about it. Someone wants to confront me as far as in conversationally, I'm prepared. I'm a gun owner. I own 7 guns. So I'm not, you know, someone who doesn't know. And I'm as outraged at the NRA and all these ineffectual people down in D.C. who refuse to do anything. But I'm not concerned about my safety or anything like that.
If you're just tuning in, my guest is Eric Rickstad. His new novel is Lilith. You're listening to the Book Nook on 91.3 WYSO, sharing community voices through inspired storytelling. I'm not trying to make you nervous, but I got to admit, I'm nervous just talking to you about it because here in Southwest Ohio, I live in a rural area, and everybody has a gun. I don't,
right.
They're firing their guns all the time, and I don't know. There's one point in the book where there's some concern about firing a gun too fast to reveal what kind of a gun it is. And sometimes I'm listening to these guys out there firing their guns, and I'm thinking, do they have a legal gun? Because, man, that thing is firing awfully quickly.
Right, right. Well, and that's part of the problem is that there are there's this proliferation of these types. These are military-grade tactical guns. I'm a gun owner. Like you said, my guns are used for hunting. It's ironic because as a hunter, anyone who wants to hunt with a firearm has to go through a very strict and rigorous process of passing a hunter safety course because you're handling a deadly weapon. And in that realm, they're very highly respected and regarded and treated with the appropriate reverence as to what these weapons can do if handled incorrectly. So you have to go through a weeks-long testing and you end up taking a written test and a hands-on test about proper firearm training and safety. Mm-hmm. And there's two types of guns made in this world, and that's it, too. One for hunters, maybe, and for, sporting clays. That's one group, very small group. The other group are guns made to kill human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. And there's too many guns out there that are in the hands of shouldn't have them for various reasons, and types of weapons that shouldn't even be available to our citizenry. If you want to be part of a well-regulated militia, join the National Guard. Join the armed forces. That's what they're for. I'm very strident about this. As a gun owner myself, many gun owners I know disagree with all of this rhetoric.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of the problem, and it's part of the rage this woman feels in this book, that there's, guns available out there where you don't have to go through any training. You just pick up a gun and you could buy one at 48 years old, never handle one in your life. Just go out there and have at it. Totally unacceptable from where I come from.
When we feel a sense of outrage in the story, it just keeps ramping up because of this Akers character, first of all, and then the way she handled this shooting, she was there. And
right. She
didn't follow protocol.
Right. No, she doesn't. And the superintendent I spoke with, he's 40 years in the system, either as a superintendent or principal, and a very close friend of his was the principal at Columbine. And we talked for an hour with the store owner, an hour after we'd gone long. Like the shop had been closed, bookstore had been closed for an hour, and we were still there talking at the register. And he was very, very thankful about that. And she's a teacher that breaks protocol, which is, it's called lockdown for a reason, which to me sounds like prison. You're locking yourself in. You're trapping yourself. And the idea is to lock your kids in the room and just hope the gunman doesn't come.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of doing that and trapping themselves inside, she decides, I've got to get these kids out of here. She can hear it outside in the hall. She can hear the gunshots. And she's like, what am I waiting here for? We're waiting for death. And so she escapes with the kids and becomes a hero initially.
Mm-hmm.
And remains a hero to some throughout the book. But she breaks that protocol and is held to account for it by members of the bureaucracy. And Yeah, it's just a piling on and a piling on, and it becomes much greater than guns. It becomes about men and guns, because the more I researched it and the more I wrote it and the more I spoke to people, the more I realized this is about men and guns in this country, and specifically to this country, the mythology of guns and violence. You know, the Wild West was tamed. You know, we won the West with the gun, all of that. You know, you have a issue with someone, you go out in the street and see who's fastest with a gun. And it's a lot of mythology that's wrapped up in it.
Mm. My guest is Eric Rickstad. His new novel is Lilith. You just mentioned the superintendent has a friend who was a principal at Columbine. Was that during the shooting that they were the principal? Okay.
Yep. Oh. It was. There's so many people, when I've talked to people at bookstores, the degrees of separation between people and gun violence, or even school shooting specifically, it should be infinite. There should be no degrees of, you know, there should be massive, infinite degrees of separation, because it shouldn't be happening. But they're much closer than you would think. Every single one I've spoken to people that were either involved in where they thought there was going to be a shooting and the place was in lockdown, or they were involved in a shooting, or they know someone who was. I mean, it's close to the bone. And I realized it was a man and guns issue, because zero girls and women have ever gone into a K-12 school and shot our kids.
Mm.
It's all boys. It's all men.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a new narrative of mental health issues suddenly has, you know, usurped the argument that this is guns. And that's just false too.
Toxic, lethal masculinity. And
yeah.
Speaking of degrees of separation, I have had Kevin Bacon on this program.
Yes, yes.
You know the Kevin Bacon thing?
Yes.
Right, okay.
Yes, it's always there.
Yeah. The Columbine thing, when you mentioned this principal, my cousins went to Columbine, graduated from Columbine. My aunt worked at Columbine, and she's currently married to the former principal of Columbine who retired right before the tragedy there. And to me, that particular one is emblematic of kind of the beginning. If there was stuff before that, I don't really remember it. But Columbine, it seems like almost a copycat thing with some of these people.
Yeah. One of the things that's different is, you know, after Columbine, we're on the same page as a nation. We need to do things about certain weapons. We need to do things about how to protect our kids. There was no defending it. There's no jumping to defend the Second Amendment. This was about our kids being killed. And what can we do? No, we're never going to solve everything. No policy is ever going to solve anything, but we don't talk about policy anymore. We talk about cultural warfare. And it's really a shame.
You're saying it's never going to get better.
Oh, no, I don't think so at all. I think we can step up and make it better. I think there's ways we can make it better. You know, people are tired because, you know, something happens, and we know we know the narrative from certain people, thoughts and prayers. Now's not the time to discuss it. Let's be, you know, careful that we don't tread on our Second Amendment rights. And so let's not do anything. But I think there are plenty of things that can be done, especially exposing the truth for what it is, that this isn't a gun problem. This is a men and gun problem. And there's too many of certain types of weapons that are made specifically to kill human beings. It's the only reason these guns exist.
Mm-hmm.
So then what do you own it for if not in anticipation of having it to use that way? That it's a mental health issue, which is not true.
Mm-hmm.
Women are just as prone to mental health as men, mental illness that you can't overcome through willpower, and they have equal access to guns. Well, how come then they only make up 1.2% of all mass shootings and never gone into a school? So I think we can vote. You can join every town. You can join moms who demand change. You can, I think we should strike. I think we should pick a day of Sandy Hook or Columbine or one of these atrocious days and say, none of us are going to work until you get it done.
Hmm.
You know, it worked for the UAW, it worked for the Actors Guild, the Screenwriters Guild, the health unions this past summer. Money talks. That's all that's going to get it to change. Money, 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 money. The NRA is now giving these folks more money than we can take away. So my nonviolent answer is to unite and say this is the day we start to affect change for the kids that have been killed and protect those who might otherwise be subject to it. We're not going to work in any industry, whether it be airline industry, teachers, people working in service, people working at the corner store. There's some of that being done now where they walk out for the day, but just say, we're not going back to work, and hit them where it hurts. And that's the only sort of, you know, if we can march on Washington and protest other things, I can't think of a better thing to protest to say, we're going to hit you where it hurts. We're going to take more money out of your pockets than the NRA will put into your pockets. So I think that's one approach that might work. It's certainly not going to be easy, and it's certainly going to take time, but there's a lot of people out there working hard every day.
Well, it's such a sad, frustrating situation. My guess is Eric Rickstad. His new novel is Lilith. When you've got half of Congress that are going to say, oh, yeah, in solidarity, we're not going to fire any of our guns today. It's just, it's awful. I hate to be sarcastic
about this.
It's horrendous.
That's a good point.
And we haven't mentioned her son. We need to talk about her son
because he is the
shining light in this story.
This young boy is about 8 years old, and he is changed forever by being wounded. He's in a different classroom. So she saves her classroom and goes back in for her son, breaking protocol yet again. You're not supposed to go back inside. Who of us, if we have a child, you know, mother or father, wouldn't go back in? But he's the light. He's tried to, you know, hold on to his innocence. At the same time, it's just totally been stripped from him. But he plays a very integral role in both the story and narrative and plot wise, but also he's the humanity at the core of it. He's the reason for the story to have to exist. He is a shining light, and readers have responded to him and what he goes through and how he where he's at the end of it as well.
Another great character is Homer.
Yeah, he's a great character. I believe he's someone who's been in war. You know, he's an elderly man. He's late 70s or so. Was in Vietnam. Has seen it. Knows what gun violence is. And he lives up in the UP and sort of lived up there ever since he got home in the 70s. And he's the only family this woman Elizabeth has. And he's integral to the plot. He has certain things she needs. To sort of rewrite this myth, so to speak, but he is there for her through anything, and is a solid human being and support system for her.
I know nothing about guns. Is this gun in your story? Is this imaginary? Does this really exist?
No, it's real.
Oh, okay.
It's real. I did a lot of gun research.
All right. I'd never heard of it, which doesn't mean anything because I don't know anything about it.
I had not heard of it either.
All right. Eric Rickstad joins us. His new book is Lilith. You keep citing these statistics about how it's the men, and they're sick. They're the ones with the problems. They're the ones that are doing all this violence. And in the book, Homer is upset because we're trying to train women to do that stuff.
Right. So there's a lot of gray areas, you know, there's a lot of gray areas and nuance to the story where, yeah, so now we've come along and have a lot of equal opportunity for people. One of those is sort of a paradox, sort of a conflict or a catch-22 for him where, okay, now, you know, women and young women can join the forces. You need military weapons, but it is upsetting to him because he's been part of a war that should not have been fought anyway and has had to do the worst of the worst for his country. And so he's seen it firsthand. And so to him, this area of equal opportunity may not be the best one he's seen, because as far as, you know, he's seen, he'd like to see less of it than more of it.
Mm. Eric Rickstadt has joined us. His new novel is Lilith. It's the story of a woman who fights back. And your friend Don Winslow gave you a nice blurb on the cover. It's so nice to have somebody like Don Winslow in your corner, isn't it?
It is. So my wife would call him in. He's a superhuman being and a great writer. I've going back, way back, been a fan of his writing for 2.5 decades. So it's a pleasure to have him in my corner, and also so many. He is supportive of so many writers because, you know, he's been there himself at different junctures in his career, and it's great when people remember that and sort of pay it forward, which, you know, I try to do my tiny, tiny way as well. Support writers and artists, and just try to help get the word out, help support them, encourage them.
Well, he really does do that. And
he really does.
I actually recorded a radio show with him last week for his final book. We're not going to air it till after the book comes out, but it made me sad to think that this is probably my last conversation with him. I shed a little tear over that, because
I could see that. I understand that for sure.
Before we let you go, tell us a little bit about yourself. How'd you become a writer?
I have just always had it. It came from reading. Love to read. I read very early. I was reading at like 4, and you know, in 5th grade, I was part of a literary luncheon where our school librarian had a book club that we held in the principal's office with our bagged lunches, and we discussed Judy Blume and Roald Dahl and The Great Brain and Encyclopedia Brown, and there was always just that magic when you read. Jamal Mayfield, who's Smoking, just came out, it's a fantastic book. He says, reader first. That's right, you know. And I just wanted to know, how did this book do this? How did this short story do this, where I just read this thing and I felt sad, or I felt elated, or I felt angry, or I felt excited, or, you know, or all of them at once? What's going on here? And so it's been my life pursuit since I was very little to try to figure out how to do that. I was writing little stories since I could hardly write.
Well done. The book is Lilith by Eric Rickstadt, and you just mentioned Smoke Kings by Jamal Mayfield. I had him on for that book, and you're right.
Excellent.
What an impressive book. And here's my fearless prediction. First novel, Edgar Award next year. That's that I'm saying right now. He's gonna get it. I don't see how anyone else can beat him. And Eric, I hope Lilith receives all the readership that it deserves. And thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it, Vic.
My guest has been Eric Rickstadt, and you heard about Lilith on the Book Nook, for the Book Nook. I'm Vic McKeonis.